You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13. The Athletic.
All right, Reds, Tony Evans here with Walk On, your Liverpool podcast from The Athletic. Manchester City come to Anfield on Sunday for a titanic battle at the top of the Premier League. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about Derwin's late heroics at Nottingham Forest, Thirsty's trip to Prague, and, of course, Guardiola's Anfield case. Loads more, loads to talk about with James Pearce and Simon Hughes. But as ever, we'll start with those three words. Simon, I always pick on you on this. Never in the history of time have you come prepared.
No, you're right. And as soon as you mentioned that, just before we started recording, I started panicking. But I have thought, I've come up with an idea, and it's Villa Part 2. James knows what I'm referring to.
2019-20.
Yeah.
The week before Liverpool beat Man City at home, the late show at Villa Park, Robertson equalises, Sadio Mane gets the late winner.
Yeah, it's a little bit cryptic. It's a lot cryptic, to be honest. I bet you've got something that's less cryptic, James.
I've gone for make Anfield feral.
You know, I like that. I like that because, you know, a lot of people seem to think that it's the singing that brings atmosphere. It isn't. It's a snarliness.
Yes.
And what they'll need on Sunday is a whole ton of snarliness. Well, let's see what they're saying over on the Walk On Podcast Facebook group. Well, Sanjay Mystery says, never give up. James Kieran serves Forest right. Too true. Joseph Paul Yoro, imagine being us. And Nelson Archer, bring on City. And, you know, I would say, get into them.
To join our community of listeners on Facebook, just search Walk On Podcast and join the group.
So many in the way. McAllister now tries to keep the pressure on. Nunez is there! Darwin Nunez wins it for Liverpool.
Well, Forrest, I mean, let's face it. On this podcast last week, we were all giddy. We were all overexcited after the Van Dijk's late goal against Chelsea that won the cup. Well, you know what? I haven't stopped being giddy and I haven't stopped being excited. What they need to do, they need to, like, actually, James, I think, get a lead, win a game, and stop us living on the edge for so long. You know, it's doing nothing for my health, but it's brilliant.
Yeah, it's just been an absolutely remarkable period, hasn't it? And, you know, when you think about the manner in which Liverpool advanced in the FA Cup on the back of that Carabao Cup triumph with the kids shining, and then to pull another one out the bag away at Forest. I mean, I must admit, I was sat there at the City Ground as it ticked away from 97 to 98 to 99, and it was, you know, I'd given up. Forget never give up. It was like, this isn't happening. You know, it wasn't. It just didn't feel like there was a goal in it. It was Liverpool looked jaded. What was it? Fourth game in 11 days. You know, if anything, in stoppage time, you know, Forest looked just as likely to nick one themselves. So you kind of thought, okay, do you know what? You know, not a great day all in, you know, but, you know, it's not the end of the world. You know, we're still, you know, what, 11 games out. And then, yeah. What a transformation in that one moment. It turns a bang average day into one you never forget.
Before we go to site, I'm going to do a public service announcement for all the bed wetters out there. Please don't tweet before the final whistle. I mean, you know, it's did you have your Sack Jürgen tweet ready, Si?
Come on, Tony. you know what? There is no better way to win a football match than that.
It's great, isn't it?
Yeah, there is no better way. I mean, you know, coming up, well, we just passed a year since the 7-0 over Man United. Obviously, that was amazing. But a 1-0 win, when you don't necessarily deserve it, away from home, against a team where there's a historical rivalry. There's quite a lot of nastiness inside the stadium.
Yeah, and we'll get on to that in a minute.
Yeah, you know the victory is going to be damaging to them, but really, really lift your own prospects. From across into the box, from your under... Well, he always seems to be under fire, doesn't he, Darwin Núñez? Even though he shouldn't be at this stage of the season, given what he's done. But there is literally no better way to win it. I was at home, actually, and I wasn't watching it live, constantly updating... the feeds online. And when I saw Núñez 99, I was just like, oh my God, how has it happened again? And, you know, I just love the goal as well. You know, it's a proper sort of old school, last minute, let's just put the ball in the box and hope that somebody's there. And he was there, great header. Although I wasn't there, obviously spoken to people who were, and everybody's saying it's, you know, the moment of the season, better in some ways than the weekend before. Yeah, incredible.
Yeah, well, I mean, let's hope they go for a hat-trick of weekends where it gets better every weekend, because that would be ideal. But, James, just talking about the undercurrents of unpleasantness there at the City Grounds, I mean, you were there. It was a rivalry some 40 years ago, more than 40 years ago. But what's made it really toxic is the Hillsborough undercurrents, isn't it?
It was there from the, you know, the opening minute of the game. That was the... You know, the thing for me, the sign-on chants started so early, and then there were, you know, the poverty references just kept on going, and, you know, denigrating Liverpool as a city and all the rest of it. And certainly, you know, the piece that I wrote afterwards was about the moment, you know, the minute of mayhem that sorted the game. And that involved speaking to three or four fans who were in the away end, and they all basically said, it's not just the situation with the title race, but it was the situation of having to sit through those 99 minutes and listening to what was around them, and then to score and win the game in that manner. You know, the word karma came up a few times, because that adds another element to just how sweet it was, because just not a particularly pleasant atmosphere. And anyone who's seen, you know, there was some pretty despicable scenes behind Liverpool's dugout as well, when in the aftermath of the goal, with Forest fans, you know, the verbal abuse, but also being held back by stewards, from, you know, Liverpool's physio getting an absolute mouthful. That undercurrent of unpleasantness just made beating them in that fashion, you know, even better.
Yeah, Si, and I think one of the aspects of this that people don't talk about enough, really, and they don't understand with respect to Hillsborough. Remember, they were the other team at Hillsborough. They witnessed it all. Yet, they have become, arguably, the most vehement Hillsborough deniers of them all. And a lot of that's got to do with Brian Clough, who, in my view, is the man most responsible, apart from Kelvin McKenzie, for propagating the lies about Liverpool fans at Hillsborough.
Well, a couple of years ago, it seemed that Forest, as a, you know, a wider supporter base, had tried to address this.
I've been involved with a lot of Forest fans.
Yeah, and so I was surprised by the level of vitriol at the weekend, because, you know, there are people who are very rationally minded, who tried to educate around it. If I remember correctly, I think last season, you know, they were good when they came to Anfield, I think. So I don't know what's prompted it this season. Is it because suddenly Liverpool are successful again and the team to beat? Is that too simplistic a reason for it? It seems like all that education has just been forgotten about it. And what really, really just pisses me off generally, not just Forest fans, but fans of all these clubs, particularly from working class areas, all the stigma that's thrown at Liverpool, if you trace it back, the cause of the problems that existed in Liverpool is from the same source that caused all the problems in places like Nottingham, in the mining towns, in the Nottinghamshire county, you know, right across Leicestershire. You know, Leicester City being particularly bad for it over a long period of time. And they don't see it like that. They just now think, I don't know whether it's younger people who think it's just something to be laughed about and aren't engaged with the historical connotations and realise how painful it is to sit through that. I mean, I've got to be honest, I don't want to go to a football match being reminded of death. So they there's more has got to happen now. It can't just be, oh, well, we'll try and work with you when, you know, when it's easier for us. It can't just be because Liverpool, you know, are doing well, so that makes them fair game anymore. And to answer your question about Brian Clough, yes, he was one of the few people, well, not one of the few people, one of the most senior, most recognisable people at the time who spoke about the causes of Hillsborough, which were obviously incorrect. And people in Nottingham believed him because he was the Messiah at the time. So
he still remains the greatest hero. He's there, Shankly.
And he does. He does. So it's been very difficult to get away from that. And, you know, it's just, it was the one, you know, obviously a brilliant day. I just said it sort of, you know, heightened the sense of victory for Liverpool. But a much sooner that people, particularly, it's not about younger people like me who can't remember Hillsborough. There are still people who go to the match who were at Hillsborough and have to confront this, particularly around this time of year. Very difficult for them. I don't think people realise just how hurtful it is. So I just wish they'd stop. You know, there's lots of other things you can take the piss out of Liverpool for. Something can be funny, but not this, not death, not when people are still suffering and feel, you know, really, really bad around this time of year. It makes me sick, to be honest, and I just wish they'd actually sit around with people who are connected to this and have suffered from it. I think that experience would surely make them realise what they're doing is hurtful.
Tony, I was just going to add to that, of course, they did have a genuine grievance about the manner of the winning goal. But having been there and seen like what happened in the aftermath, it was genuinely baffling. Like, I was stood in the mix zone at the City Ground waiting for interviews, and Forrest bring Mark Clattenburg out to address the media in his role as their referee analyst. You were just thinking, what has Premier League football become when a club is rolling out their referee analyst to bemoan, you know, and Clattenburg was talking as if genuinely Quivín Keller had pumped the ball downfield. It had bounced once. Darwin Núñez had nodded it in, and that was game over. It was like, aside from everything else around it, like, they've absolutely lost sight of reality. Like, yes,
Maradona in the Azteca caused less of a fuss.
Exactly. It was,
of course, that was a forest keeper as well.
There was 1 minute and 50 seconds between that drop ball and Liverpool scoring. Forrest had the ball back a couple of times. I don't know, like, when you watch it back, Hudson-Odoi and Iwuanyi both tried to dribble the ball out of their own penalty box. Either of them could have just stuck the ball in the River Trent and the game would have been over. Okay, so the idea that drop ball has cost Forrest a point in their survival push or given Liverpool an extra two in their title challenge is just genuine, absolute nonsense. And of course, Tierney, yes, he made a mistake. He made a mistake earlier on in the game as well over another drop ball that went the other way. So I just don't get it. It just kind of summed up where modern football is at when someone like Clattenburg is being put up for interview and a team is hiding behind that rather than the reality of what actually happened.
What's the next development, isn't it? We all get ourselves a pet referee, a team referee, who comes out and complains, throws his former colleagues under a bus, and everyone goes, our referee knows more than your referee.
I think my favourite line, because I only overheard some of it, because I was actually waiting for Virgil van Dijk, but it was, with a straight face, Clattenburg said, I have attempted to get into the referee's room to see poor Tierney. He wouldn't let me in. And I was like, what's he right? Why would he let you in? On what possible capacity would he let you in?
Here's a question then. Which referee would you want fighting your cause from a Liverpool perspective?
Oh my God.
How weird would that be? I'm trying to think of all the great referees we've had. I'm going to go for a gingerman like myself, Paul Durkin.
Paul Durkin. There's a blast from the past.
Send him in. Get Durkin in.
To be honest, Klatz has done us a lot of favours in the past, particularly against Everton. So, you know, I mean, maybe that'll be the transfer of the summer. Liverpool in for Klatz. I can see it now.
Well, according to rival fans, we've now got Paul Tierney on the payroll, which is some transformation. Good to see Klopp. I see Tierney hasn't got a game this weekend. He's not reffing, is he?
No.
Do you think Klopp is just, that's rotation from Klopp, giving him a breather, saving him for the run?
Does he get a medal, by the way?
Well, I'd like to think it'd be on the open top bus.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Enough of this nonsense. Let's get back to the real thing, to the football, to what's happening. And it's the last meeting, certainly in the Premier League, between Klopp and Guardiola. And that's a rivalry which really, Si, it's defined the age of the 115 charges, hasn't it?
That's one way of putting it, Tony. Yeah. I mean, the games between the two teams have just been incredible, haven't they? Over such a long period of time now. I was in the pub a couple of weeks ago, you know. And for, I don't really like pubs with big screens showing football. But for some reason, there's a new pub where I live and it has a big screen and it was showing a game between Man United and Man City. I think it was like 2010, you know, sort of peak Ferguson period, you know, his last sort of run at the titles. And this was considered one of the great games at the time between City and United. And it was a great game of football. But what I realised was just how far advanced the football that these two managers have produced since then. I mean, that game that I was talking about in 2010, it was so speculative, the ball pinging around everywhere. I like that sort of football, I can't deny. But you watch the games between City and Liverpool now, certainly since the sort of 2017-18 season. You know, the quality of it is, I would say, is better than anything that I've ever seen. That's not just me from a Liverpool perspective. It's just generally. Like, the best game between the two teams, I would say, was the one where actually Liverpool lost at City. You know, the game in early 2019, where Liverpool, if they'd won 3-2 or 1-2-1, I don't think Guardiola could have complained. It could have gone either way. It was just such an amazing game of football, such high quality football, the tactics, the speed of it, everything was just incredible. I remember coming away from that game thinking, it doesn't really get much better than that, you know, if you can take away the emotions from it. And there's been a lot of games like that. There's only been one or two games where it's been quite one-sided. You know, we obviously saw that when City beat Liverpool, Mane got sent off, and the win for City at Anfield when in the COVID season, which doesn't count right anyway. It doesn't really mean anything. So I think, you know, when there's been something riding on it and both teams have had to go for it, they've just always been amazing games. And it's sad that it's coming to an end, I would say, because it certainly feels like the end of something for me. I don't think as much as like sort of Arsenal are trying to break into that pack, I think they've still got some distance to go before they can create that sense of tension between the two teams as well.
Yeah, James, I mean, I think looking back in the future, people might well say that one of Klopp's biggest achievements was challenging City, stopping them winning it, never mind four times in a row, five times in a row, for, you know, absolutely dominating the English game. Liverpool have been the only side that's been able to go head-to-head to them, and not every season, we know, because we haven't had the resources to do it every season the way City have. But we've challenged them often enough to create a rivalry and to make it a really enticing fixture.
Yeah. You kind of think without Klopp's Liverpool being as good as they have been, how dull would this period in English football have been in terms of just one club, absolute domination? Yeah, I agree with Si. It is sad in a way it's coming to an end because it's just been on a different level to anything I've ever seen before. The Klopp Guardiola kind of battles that they've had, and I think, you know, both managers have talked about it, haven't they? That without the other one doesn't perform at the levels it has, because especially in the title races they've had against each other, they've inspired each other to reach even greater heights and reach levels of consistency that we've not seen in the history of English football. Again, I remember, like, growing up as a kid when it was like, you know, and obviously it was a long, long wait for Liverpool to win the title. You'd always think, like, oh, you can probably afford to lose three or four. But once it gets beyond that, yeah, you know, you can forget about it for this season. And now we've had a situation where Liverpool have got 97 points and not won the title. Was it 92 or 93 on the other occasion when they fell a point short? So, and it's, yeah, the speed, the intensity, the tempo, the attacking nature of it, the, you know, how bold both managers have been and innovative, and of course, you know, the actual rivalry in terms of the spikiness of it. And so, yeah, it's the world's eyes will be trained on Anfield on Sunday afternoon, because we just know it's going to be special. And yeah, Klopp, you know, what Klopp has done with, you only have to look at the numbers in terms of overall spend, net spend. I don't think we'll really appreciate what he's done in this era until probably in the years after he's gone, and maybe also in the context of when those 115 charges actually get properly heard and properly punished if they're found guilty.
With Guardiola and Klopp, both managers have changed the teams over this period. I mean, they're very, very different squads to when they first met, and the ability to develop and keep up these high standards has been something that you can probably only a few managers in history have been able to do anything like that.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think back to, like, the last true rivalry, a different rivalry. I mean, you'd probably say Wenger against Ferguson, and it sort of went a little bit, then it came again. Whereas this, largely, aside from, you could say, the two seasons where Liverpool have fallen away, for five out of the last six, seven seasons, it's been active all the time. I mean, I think back to that summer of 2016, when it was 16 or 17, when Guardiola sort of had his first season at City and then realised he basically needed to tear up the team and, you know, signed an awful lot of players for an awful lot of money. Like, Klopp never did that. You know, it was like a sort of a gradual thing, which is why it probably took Liverpool as long as it did, relatively, to go... go and challenge for Europe and challenge City. Klopp never had that benefit of just being able to say, you know what, I'm going to sell everybody and buy everybody. Now, obviously, that says a lot about Klopp. I mean, people will talk about Guardiola. He's only great managing, you know, sort of when he's got money. But I think that's a bit unfair. I think he's great at managing world-class players and getting them to do things that even they probably don't think or can't imagine to be possible or don't think about themselves. You know, that the standard of football has just been incredible from City. You know, if you're able to look beyond, you know, what the authorities have charged them with.
In pure football terms, you've got to say that they're one of the best teams, well, certainly that I've ever seen.
Definitely. I think that
if not the best.
Yeah, that again, I think, is a measure of what Klopp's done, as James has said and what you suggested before. To be able to go head to head with them and be a constant, Liverpool haven't been a thorn in the side. They've really tested them as far as they can. Liverpool have given the Premier League credibility throughout this period, this illusion of fairness, maybe to some extent, you know. And I think as well, you know, that the thing that is great about the sort of the two styles is they're totally at times very different sorts of styles of football as well, which makes it so unpredictable and exciting, really. It's difficult to think of, like, sort of, it's difficult to think for me, like, really which game you've taken the most pleasure from, because there's been so many, really, over the years that have been incredible, and it really cranks up the atmosphere now. I think, you know, very different atmosphere at Anfield and at City, I'd say. You know, I think the games between Liverpool and City at City have brought sort of the most the most intensity from the City crowd as well at times. So I remember, you know, being at City on a couple of, I remember that the game in the Champions League in 2018 when Liverpool had won the first leg convincingly. Liverpool, I don't think I've ever seen Liverpool team as stretched as that in the second leg for the first 40 minutes. How they came through that, I just don't know. You know, it's still one of, when I think about that first half, I was like right at the back of the press box. You know, remember when City strategically put us at the back of the press in the overspill? I saw that as punishment for what had happened at Anfield a week earlier. But I was sort of trying to watch that from behind the seats because it was like, oh my God, Liverpool are getting absolutely battered here. But they managed to come through it. And, you know, it was just an incredible night. Like it was like
if you want to pick a moment to see how Liverpool got to Guardiola and gone to his mind, it's that night because they blew us away in the first half. And I always remember going downstairs and seeing you downstairs in the press room, and someone said to us, "Pep's been sent off." And he got sent off at half time.
Oh yeah, he did, didn't he?
Yeah, and we'd all missed it because it was all when we went downstairs and come out in the second half wasn't a problem. Well, nowhere near the problem now the first half. We were on top for most of it. But, you know, that's how much Liverpool have got into Guardiola's mind.
I've got to be honest, I think it really pisses him off, to be honest, that despite his genius and his madness, there's really nothing he can do about Anfield when it's like it is when City come. Okay, I totally accept that, you know, on any given ordinary match day, Anfield can be quite sort of sanitised and like any other grounds. But in the big games, when there's a sense of injustice, a sense of frustration, a sense of rivalry, it's very difficult to play in that environment. And I think it just really annoys Guardiola that he can't come up with anything that negates it. You know, he comes up with plans for everything, but there's literally nothing he can do when it's like that. And to be fair, he's been quite open and relatively honest about that, I think. And I think he would, you know, I wonder whether there's a part of him that thinks, I would have loved to have been a Liverpool manager with that sort of backing at times. I mean, that would have been interesting, wouldn't it? But yeah, it's just when City come now, that, like, you know, it's, I'm excited talking about Sunday already, just talking about it. You know, leave aside the whole what it might mean for the Premier League title race, just seeing how City react to what it's going to be like on Sunday, because it's guaranteed that no matter what time of day, what day it's played on, what time of year, this game is going to be difficult for City to get through because of the way the crowd will react to their presence on the football pitch.
Well, James, that sends me to you, and the question I'm asking you is a bit different. How are we going to beat them? And the answer isn't with the crowd. And if we don't beat them, I'm going to hold you responsible.
Well, I'll tell you what Liverpool don't do. You don't set up like Manchester United did at the Etihad last Sunday, because sat watching that, and as good as City were, you just thought, I couldn't understand what United were trying to achieve, because City are so methodical and so good that, you know, it was just inevitable that even after Rashford's goal that they were going to find a way again and again and then finally again. You have to be combative. We've seen it. Like the blueprint, to be fair, is there for Klopp from the home matches against City in this era. Because as Si said earlier, you know, Guardiola's record at Anfield is actually very poor. The only win he's had was in the COVID era behind closed doors. And Guardiola's referenced the crowd at Anfield numerous times. Pretty sure he referenced it last season. See, when Liverpool won 1-0 with Salah's goal, and of course Klopp was sent off himself late on in that game for his protests, and Guardiola had gone wild, hadn't he? I think City had a goal disallowed, didn't they? For, I think it was a Haaland foul on Fabinho in the build-up. And he put that down to, you know, the noise and the intimidating environment that the officials were in and all the rest of it. So yeah, you can't allow them to dictate. You can't allow them to do what they want to do, because it just doesn't work. You have to press them. You have to unsettle them, force them to give the ball up in areas they don't want to give the ball up. And that's why, for me, it's going to be intriguing to see how Klopp handles the two games with Sparta Prague Thursday night and City Sunday, because I just think the sheer intensity and energy you need to put one over City means I think you probably do have to rest, not loads, but two or three, and look at the bigger picture. Like, I'd be resting Nunes on Thursday night. I'd want Darwin Nunes fresh as a daisy to get at City on Sunday. I'd probably even rest someone like McAllister, and maybe Robertson play Tsimikas at left back, and probably play Kwanzaa and rest Konate. I think Konate is probably his outstanding form's gone under the radar a bit in recent weeks. So that's the key. You have to knock them out of their stride, because if you allow, I mean, you look to those, the numbers from the Manchester derby were just obscene. I think City had something like nearly 400 passes in United's final third compared to 56. It's like, you know, we know it's going to be so different, because the only way to beat City is to kind of ruffle their feathers.
You're listening to Walk On, brought to you by The Athletic.
City are in a bit of a transition in a sense, because I think we're seeing the change from Kevin De Bruyne to Phil Foden as being their main man for the future. And I mean, one of the things that does concern me in terms of being aggressive and pressing them, which I agree with James we have to do, is if they catch you at it and suck you in, no one moves the ball behind you quicker, do they?
Yeah, they're very good. I mean, as I say, they're a very good side. And some of the football is better than, you know, I would even argue some of the Barcelona football that Pep produced. But it's quite interesting. I've been doing some reading over the last couple of weeks. And in Pep Linders' book, he recalls that game that I just referenced, you know, the Champions League game, 17-18. And he says, he talks about the following season, in 18-19, City came to Anfield and just didn't play for the first hour. They just, you know, very unlike City, and just sort of tried to soak up the pressure, very conservative, you know, at times, you know, just kick the ball into the stand to stop the play. And it was, ended up with City getting a penalty in the last minute, and Mahrez ballooned it over the bar. It's like one of the games that people forget a little bit, because it finished 0-0 and it was quite early on in the season. Now, it's got me thinking, really. You're always thinking that Guardiola's trying to second-guess what's going on. He must be tempted to have more of a go given the injuries in the Liverpool team. It's not, you know, Liverpool have obviously had some amazing results the last couple of weeks, but it's not Liverpool in full flow. It's not, you know, the full strength Liverpool. So he must be able to, he'll be looking at the weaknesses in the Liverpool team and trying to expose them. But I also think he must be tempted to just think, well, you know what? Let's just try and sit here and frustrate the crowd and then have a blow in the last sort of 20, 25 minutes. If I actually think that a draw wouldn't be a bad result for either team, really, at this stage, because it keeps Liverpool ahead of City. It keeps City in touch with Liverpool. You know, it might hand a bit of incentive to Arsenal, but, well, if they win, which you expect that they would.
They'd be top of the league.
Yeah, which they'd be top, but it wouldn't demoralise either set of teams or fan bases, but it's equally not within the makeup of either Klopp or Guardiola to do that, I suspect. I think that Guardiola might remember that game and think, you know what, we just need to stay in it early, really, and make sure that, you know, all the stuff that James talked about, Liverpool don't come out all guns blazing and just try and get on top here. Let's just try and frustrate them, park the crowd a bit, and then see if we can get something late on. He has done it before. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if he did that at the weekend.
You know, if it gets into the last 10 and it's, you know, it's a draw, they'll be happy with the points. But I would have thought the mindset of both of them going in, notwithstanding, James, all the injuries Klopp's got and all the people that are coming back and may not be up to full speed, but what they'd most like to do is put a dagger in the heart of the other team's title challenge.
Yeah, because I think it's not just about, you know, the points at stake on Sunday, isn't it? It's that feeling of what it could do for you for the rest of the season. Because, you know, we kind of been here before, haven't we, where we know that at this stage City can just be absolutely relentless in terms of just ticking them off. So it's, yeah, City have got a couple of other tricky games left. When you look at it, you think, well, they've got Arsenal at home, haven't they? In a couple of weeks, they've got to go to Tottenham, haven't they? But then when you look at their other fixtures, you think, I don't see too many other opportunities. I think Liverpool have got the harder games. We know, you know, just how much United would absolutely love to throw a spanner in the works with that trip that Liverpool have got there. Obviously, you know, you've got Villa to come as well. I think Liverpool have got the harder running. So I think, it's more what Liverpool would take from this in terms of momentum. If you could put one over City, it gives you then that, you know, that little cushion where you could afford potentially a draw somewhere. But of course, you know, it is a different dynamic to this title race. The fact that Arsenal are so close behind as well, because, you know, what are they, 2 points adrift of Liverpool, one behind City at the minute. So, it's, you don't want to, I think the danger with games like this is you almost like build it up to say it's a title decider, which obviously it's not, because it's too far out and you have to take Arsenal into the mix. But I think we all know that this is going to have huge, huge implications for what does happen.
I think, you know, you're right. It's too far out to say it's a title decider. But here's the reality. If City win, they win the league.
I agree with you. I think, I would go that far.
I think back to like 2014, when Liverpool beat City at Anfield, didn't they, late on in April?
Yeah.
You know, to go ahead. And even then, they didn't win it. You know, obviously, there was two games where Liverpool dropped points in the subsequent weeks. So as James says, there's greater distance to go. Liverpool have also got FA Cup games and potentially more Europa League games in the midst of all that. But I tend to agree with you, Tony. I think if City win at Anfield, bear in mind, you know, everything you've said about like Guardiola's record, he's never won at Anfield in front of a crowd. That's the reality of it. So would Guardiola therefore see a draw as a reasonable result? Keeps them in touch. Doesn't allow Liverpool to pull away. Gives them a bit of confidence that, you know, that they can, you know, get the results elsewhere that they need to, and that Liverpool might drop more points given, you know, the injury list at the moment.
Talking of injuries, I know it's a bit far out, and I know there's Prague tomorrow, and we'll talk about that in a minute, James. But what sort of team do you see Klopp putting out on Sunday?
Yeah, I guess as we're sat here now, the big unknown is what kind of role, if any, Mohamed Salah is going to be able to play, because he's certainly close. You know, I think the last I heard was that he could potentially have a role off the bench in the Europa League. And then, you know, in an ideal world, wouldn't you, you'd want to see him probably get 20, 25 minutes in Prague and then be in decent enough shape to start against City on Sunday. Because, as you know, yes, Liverpool have managed to do unbelievably well without him, but he has to strike fear into City, just what he's done for them in previous years. You only have to go back to that game last season when he made a mug of, I think it was Cancelo, wasn't it, at the time, and ran half the length of Anfield to score the winner. And he's done it to them on numerous occasions. So Salah's a bit of an unknown, of course. You know, big boost getting Szoboszlai back. You'd think that, you know, he'll get more minutes in midweek and then potentially start. So you're probably looking at a midfield three, ideally, of McAllister, Szoboszlai, and Endo, who I think Endo's been in brilliant form. Obviously, Konate, Van Dijk, Connor Bradley, you know, another huge, huge occasion for him. Robertson at left back, obviously. Kelleher, who, you know, we haven't even mentioned, have we? It barely gets a mention, the fact that Liverpool are challenging on all fronts without the best goalkeeper in world football, because Kelleher has done so well deputising for him. And then up top, like I said, you know, you want to see Salah wide right, Diaz left, and Nunes through the middle. But again, like I said, I wouldn't want to see Darwin Nunes play 90 away to Sparta Prague, because I think you just have to balance it, don't you? Because I think a draw in Prague is absolutely fine. I'd shake hands on that now. 0-0, 1-1, whatever you fancy. You just back yourself to finish the job off at Anfield.
A small defeat there wouldn't be too bad.
Exactly, yeah. Because everything has to be, and I know Klopp will obviously say, you know, the mantra of the next game is always the most important, but it's not actually not true, is it, this week?
Sunday
is considerably bigger.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Prague before we go. Si, you know what? It's not the Champions League, but if you get to go to places like Prague, arguably it's better, isn't it? More fun.
What a city. I haven't been there since 2002 when I was 16 years old. But it was a beautiful city. Can I just make one point about Salah before I continue? Just check there. Salah's goals record for Liverpool. His most goals have come against Man United, 12 goals, followed by Man City, 11. I mean, that's unbelievable. That's pretty special, that, isn't it, when you think about it? It just shows you how important he's been to Liverpool over a long period of time. So thank you for listening for that. I'll get back to Prague now. But,
I can't believe you've done any research for this.
You know what, right? James, are you questioning my aptitude for stats and data?
You've got an earpiece in. Is someone feeding you this information?
You know what? As soon as you mentioned Salah then, and you were rambling on with your answer, it allowed me to look at LFC history. So I can give you some more numbers if you want.
I see a brilliant advertising campaign. Salah, destroyer of Manx. I like that.
Yeah, it's good. Well, you know what as well? He got 11 against West Ham, which, who cares? 9 against Arsenal, 9 against Tottenham, you know, and then 7 against Everton somewhere down the list. So, you know, he saves up some of his most important goals for the biggest games.
Yeah. He needs to book himself up for the derby then, doesn't he?
It was a bit, yeah. Very disappointing record against Everton.
I mean, he could get 4 or 5 in one game there, couldn't he?
Yeah. So let's get back to Prague. Yeah, I agree with you, Tony. Sometimes, you know, one of the sad elements of the Champions League is it sounds spoiled, but you do tend to end up going back to the same cities over and over again over a long relative. You know, for a few years, Liverpool seemed to get Porto all the time, you know, which is a great city. I love Porto. But there are places, certainly in Eastern Europe, with some of these countries that are no longer able to create teams that compete in the Champions League, which means that you see them in the Europa League more often, and it's just more interesting place to go. I would be ordinarily up for a trip for Prague, but I'm sadly not going this week. And I'm sure everybody who does go will have a wonderful time.
Yeah, man, you're over there. You're just off as soon as we put the mics away. You're rushing off to go on a plane, aren't you, James?
I am. Yeah. Looking forward to it. Yeah, I don't think I've been over there actually for about 15 years. So, I spoke to a Czech journalist over there yesterday, actually, and I think because you're obviously from the Liverpool perspective, you're looking at the bigger picture and thinking, well, you know, this is a game just to kind of get past and negotiate and no injuries. And as you said, you know, a draw or even a narrow defeat, not the end of the world. But like for Sparta, this is huge. He was saying that they've literally, since the draw was made, been counting down the days, and they actually fancy their chances. You know, they're top of the Czech league. They drew with, in their derby, with Slavia on the weekend, which keeps them firmly in control of the title race over there. He said, you know, I think just over 19,000, I think he said, quite a kind of close, you know, tight-knit small stadium, which he said will be absolutely bouncing come late Thursday afternoon. So when the draw was made, you kind of thought to yourself, well, the big one to avoid was Karabag, because, you know, that would have been an absolute nightmare to have had a trip.
That would have been brilliant, James. Come on.
It would have been right up your street, but not.
I'd have been pushing you out the way to go to that one.
Oh my God! I think you'd have been playing the. Yeah. Probably left that many back.
Nobody wants to see that, James.
and then of course you kind of think, well, so you avoided the long travel. You looked at, probably in terms of quality, the Portuguese teams would have been the most difficult. So you thought, it's a decent enough draw, but they aren't going to be mugs, are they? I think they knocked out Galatasaray, you know, and Galatasaray have thrown a few quid at things, haven't they, the last year or two? So, and I think when you go back to Liverpool, I think the only previous meeting was 2010-11, I think, when there was just one goal in it over the two legs. Dirk Kuyt made the decisive contribution. So, not straightforward, but yeah, I still think it's been a theme of the season, hasn't it? Klopp making changes, those who are coming in, stepping up and delivering in difficult circumstances. And hopefully Thursday night will be another addition to that collection.
Well, that's it from Walk On, your Liverpool podcast brought to you by The Athletic. Thanks to James and Simon and you for listening. We'll be back next week and hopefully we'll be in pole position in the title race.
The Athletic.